Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
The U.S. abstained. This was a vote in the United Nations that called for a ceasefire in Gaza because of Ramadan, Muslim holiday. The United States abstained. It is quite clear that decisions like this are lost on today's America, because America has clearly lost the very idea of leadership. To abstain on a resolution demanding a ceasefire in Gaza, which would only allow Hamas to further get its military house in order, to get weapons together and engage more bombings, to engage more attacks. This would be a lifeline to Hamas, which right now is being pummeled by the Israeli Defense Forces. The screaming is, my gosh, look at the children being killed. No questions or conversations about Hamas killing 1,300, setting babies on fire, raping women. As a matter of fact, they don't even admit to the rape. They won't discuss the rape. People like Jamal Bowman, the despicable Jew hater congressman from New York, what a lowlife, a lowlife human being. I'm never going to run into the guy. If I was a member of Congress, there's nothing I wouldn't say to the guy on in front of a camera, not in front of a camera. And if I get the chance, I'll say it too. The rape of women by Hamas was propaganda set in the early days of the conflict. Propaganda. You want to know what a lowlife these progressives are, these communist-aligned folk are, these Marxist-desirous people are. This is why it matters when the United States decides we're not going to vote against a resolution that goes after Israel for defending itself, but we'll abstain. That is a story in and of itself, and one that must be addressed. Tony Katz today, 833-GOT-TONY, 833-468-8669. This was the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations.
The Security Council demands that the terrorist group immediately and unequivocally cease all hostilities and all abuses of human rights and violations of international humanitarian law, and disarm and demobilize. The Security Council demands the immediate and unconditional release of all those abducted who remain in captivity. The Security Council recognizes that some of such acts may amount to crimes against humanity. Well, colleagues, I did not draft this text. You know who did? This council. This is the resolution adopted by the council 10 years ago when Boko Haram kidnapped the schoolgirls in Nigeria. So I ask you again, why can this council call on Boko Haram to lay down their arms, but the same cannot be demanded of the murderers, Hamas terrorists? Is the life of little baby Kfir Bibas worth less than the life of Nigerian child? Sadly, it's for the same reason why you can condemn terror attacks in Russia and Iran, but not in Israel. To this council, Israeli blood is cheap. This is a travesty, and I'm disgusted.
We all should be. Because none of this is about Jews and none of this is about Israel. This is about the kind of world you want to live in and who your friends are. Who do you want next to you in the fight, or who do you want dictating your life? That's what this is about. Anybody who has spent any time thinking about this at all knows that this is the case. Which is why the idea that the United States would abstain is a statement saying we don't have the same position on Israel that we used to have. Translated differently, we don't have the same position on being a moral authority in the world that we used to have. You know, the conversation that one of the things that we saw from the horrific withdrawal from Afghanistan, which is Joe Biden's fault, is that it showed our friends that maybe we are not the ally, the friend that they thought we were. This abstaining from the UN resolution, instead of voting against the UN resolution, is more proof of this. If you want to see America more alone, you're about to see it. Or worse, America with the wrong people. America now connected to the wrong folk. Picking a new friend set that, well, nobody should want to be friends with. After abstaining, the shameful abstention from the United States, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli government said, no more meetings. We're canceling all the meetings. And John Kirby, national security coordinator, does the press work. He's perplexed.
John, what is the president's reaction to the decision by Netanyahu not to send an Israeli delegation this week?
I got to tell you, Steve, we're kind of perplexed by this. A couple of points that need to be stated and, in fact, restated. Number one, it's a non-binding resolution, so there's no impact at all on Israel and Israel's ability to continue to go after Hamas. Number two, as I said in my opening statement, it does not represent a change at all in our policy.
There's two lies there. Second one first. Of course it engages a change. It is a clear statement that being a moral authority and standing up for a democracy is not going to happen. That's number one. Number two, does it matter if it's non-binding? What would binding be? We demand that you stop, and Israel goes, no, now what? Israel, by the way, is going to go into Rafah. Israel is going to put an end to the last 4 to 6 battalions of Hamas. Israel is going to do what they can to capture or kill every last Hamas member. And we should also be clear that the entirety of Gaza is going to be controlled by Israel until such time as this so-called international community can get their head out of their butt and put in the force to handle it. Now, will there be an international community? Will that be Great Britain, the United States, and France, some other kind of mix there? I'm not sure. I am not sure how that's going to work. But the idea that the people of Gaza, the so-called Palestinians, are going to be left to their own devices to run this new country, not happening. They're not prepared to do it. They couldn't do it. And they would go back to terrorism in a second. The non-binding part is inconsequential. The United States abstained. That's the story. That John Kirby is perplexed? John Kirby's playing the part of the fool. I'm just going to be here all pie-eyed. I can't believe they canceled their meetings. Shucks. How else was Israel supposed to show their disgust? How else was that supposed to take place? It was the right thing to do to abstain, to cancel the meetings after the abstaining. It was the right thing to do. John Kirby, I think he's got a part two to this conversation.
the president makes decisions based on the national security interests of the United States. And this decision to abstain on this resolution is in keeping with the national security interests of the United States. And quite frankly, it's in keeping with the national security concerns of the Israeli people.
No, it's not. That's a lie. The Israeli ambassador just said you were wrong. So clearly you're lying about what's best for the Israeli people. I think Israel will decide that, just like we should decide what's best for the American people. Let's go back to this resolution. Is it best for the American people to abstain? To say we no longer stand in the gap. We no longer, like William F. Buckley, stand athwart history yelling stop, or say this is not the way to be. There is something better here. There is something to stand up for here. There is something of value here. There is something we have to fight for here. It is better to say, huh? What's on Netflix? And look away while this madness happens? John Kirby is full of it and he knows it. Netanyahu and the Israelis cancel the meetings. Bernie Sanders, communist, writes, Netanyahu is upset. He cancels the delegation to D.C. because the U.S. abstained from a resolution calling for a ceasefire. But he's not so upset that he'll turn down $3.3 billion in taxpayer dollars to fund his immoral war. No more money for Netanyahu to starve Palestinian children. God, is he a scumbag. You don't want to fund Israel? Don't fund Israel. It's no sweat off my nose. None. Zero. But you understand that Israel will have to now take what it has, go into an all-out war, and a lot more people are going to die. But we should also be clear, Hamas picked the battle and Hamas picked the battlefield. I don't know why Bernie Sanders doesn't give a good holy damn about Israeli children, but he doesn't. A guy who will take Hamas's numbers and quote them as fact doesn't care about anything. Oh, stop it with the, well, you know, Tony, he's Jewish. What does that matter? What does it matter? His argument is Israel shouldn't exist. Well, no, Tony. His argument is against Netanyahu and the way he's fighting the war. Right. Thank you for proving my point. He's arguing that Israel shouldn't exist. This Ben and Jerry's wannabe co-owner is proving, you're proving the point that he thinks Israel shouldn't exist. You don't like the way Netanyahu is fighting this war. You mean you don't like the fact that Netanyahu and this unity government with Gallant, the defense minister, with Benny Gantz, the minister without profile, that's the actual term. You don't like the fact that they're fighting. Well, Tony, look at the people on the hard right in this coalition. You mean this unity government that came together after they were attacked by Hamas? Could we all grow up? If the United States was attacked, do I get to say, well, I would support the United States responding, but I don't like so-and-so in the government? The left has a never-ending amount of positions that make them look like schmucks. That I like Ben-Gavir or not, who's a very hard right guy. He is opposed to Israeli Arabs. I am not, by any stretch of the imagination. That doesn't change the fact that Hamas attacked, that Hamas burned babies alive, that they raped women, took video of it and shared it while they laughed, that they took women and babies hostage. It doesn't change any of that. So what's your argument? Your argument is progressive pablum, trying to change the subject. This is about the existence of us. Tony, I think you meant the existence of Israel. No, I did not. This is about the existence of us. This is about the idea that people should not fight back because somehow that's what's horrible. It's like when you see in sports, the first guy commits a foul and the second guy pushes the first guy and then the second guy's the one who gets the flag. Israel is bad for pushing back. Israel is bad for fighting back. Why doesn't Israel just take it? After all, they're an oppressor. After all, they're this... When they're done with Israel, they come for you, me, us, we. Exactly how much more clear do they have to make it? I believe Israel shouldn't worry about whether or not they get any funding from the United States. They should finish Hamas. Then they have to deal with Hezbollah and accept the fact that they're fighting for their existence. And maybe they can get enough private help or other nation help to somewhat survive. Because this is the moment. For us, the moment is the recognition that if we can abstain from a vote that clearly states we value democracy over terrorists, if we can have senators who will be stunned and amazed and disgusted by the idea that someone would fight terrorists and that that fight might get ugly. When they're done with Israel, they'll come for us. I swear, you have got to be a fool not to see that. You'd have to be a fool, willful, to not see what happens when America gives up the very premise of speaking up against the evil. But that's Biden administration policy these days. The elections can't come soon enough. I'm Tony Katz. Keep an eye on Cat Williams, because he said it about P. Diddy. God, I hate saying that. Sean Combs, Puff Daddy. I'm sorry. The nickname's just ridiculous. Musician, producer, has made a crap ton of money. Tony Katz today. And his homes in Los Angeles and Miami were raided by Homeland Security. Warrants coming out of a court in New York. In connection to a probe involving possible sex trafficking, sexual assault, solicitation, and distribution of illegal narcotics and firearms. At the last I saw, he's in Antigua. He is not in the United States. This is crazy town. His adult kids, two of his adult kids were arrested. I don't know exactly how many kids he has. There are interviews that have taken place. Three women and one man interviewed in New York by federal authorities in connection to this probe involving the sex trafficking and the sexual assault. Why do I bring up comedian Cat Williams? Because months ago, he was on a podcast with Shannon Sharpe. Shannon Sharpe's podcast, former NFL player. I don't think or not think anything of Shannon Sharpe. I don't know the man. I'm sure I disagree with him about plenty. Might agree with him on a couple things. He's interviewing Cat Williams. Comic. Filthy dude. He's made me laugh, but filthy dude. But he moves and he sweats and he's into it. And Cat Williams is just laying it out. And in quote-unquote Black America, this was the biggest story. There was no other story. The Cat Williams was calling people out and the things, the depravity of Hollywood and the things they make you do, and it's cult-esque and the sexual abuse. And he said these words.
It's God's side and the other side. And we don't care nothing about the other side. Period. All of these big deviants is all catching hell in 2024. It's up for all of them. It don't matter if you Diddy or whoever you is, T.G. Jakes, any of them, all lies will be exposed. That's all. And anyone who takes that the wrong way, know why they take it the wrong way.
He mentions Diddy by name. Mentions him by name. 6 months later, whatever it is, there's this. If we want to talk about the levels of perversion in Hollywood, there are. To the extent I know that any of these charges are true, I do not. I have absolutely no idea if they're true. I do know that NBC News is reporting that authorities did catch up with Sean Combs before he was scheduled a trip and phones were taken. But his homes in New York were not raided. Maybe that's next. this story is going to grow, and we're going to follow it all the way through. This is Tony Katz Today. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. First weekend is in the books, and watching March Madness from Vegas and watching people lose their minds, not only because of their team, but because of the money. I mean, just to watch it happen is something else. Tony Katz, Tony Katz Today. Good to be with you. JMV joins us right now. He is our sports guy out of Indianapolis, covering the globe when it comes to sports. We take a look, and we don't see the upsets making their way through, except maybe, of course, for Yale. That will be in the Sweet 16. As you take a look at these first rounds of games, these first couple rounds, what stands out to you as the, hey, that's interesting to look at?
Hey, a lot of chalk. I mean, a lot of higher seeds moving on like normally you don't see. And I think at the top of the NCAA tournament bracket, as we saw, you just see really good teams, and you can start with UConn. I mean, across the board, the defending champions are just so good. They add in the offseason Cam Spencer through the transfer portal coming in from Rutgers, and, you know, he's been outstanding for them. You know, I even lost guys at the NBA a year ago, but they just kind of reloaded, and Danny Hurley's got a team that, again, is going to be very tough to stop and repeat this NCAA tournament because they are just so balanced across the board. And really, Tony, on both ends. But I would start just with the higher seeds making it through to the Sweet 16. You have Purdue, if you want to talk about the most dominant player we've seen in a long time, it's Zach Edey, who's going to be the two-time player of the year in college basketball. You saw the way that they handled Utah State on Sunday. Utah State was a good squad out of the Mountain West, too. And they basically, after the first 10 minutes, had zero for the Boilermakers. So I guess if there's anything that stands out to me, it's the fact that the teams that were at the top of the seeding list, most of which are moving on through to create some really balanced high-level basketball matchups beginning on Thursday, Tony.
Kentucky was the third seed, and Kentucky was bounced in the first round, and I want to know when John Calipari is out. I don't want to hear that somehow, it's all right, and somehow he's still the guy. At what moment does Kentucky say, this was a nice run, but dude got to go?
Well, I'm surprised they haven't done it already because there is such an outcry for his job and to move on from that state. Certainly, the $33 million buyout is one thing, but they can come up with the scratch to make that up. And obviously, he'd probably end up getting another gig someplace else, so then they wouldn't be on the hook for the total payout. But clearly, he has the desire to get past where he is right now in this funk with the program. And I thought Jay Wright said it best, Tony, on CBS, the former Villanova coach, who, by the way, has been really good and decided to bail out of college basketball for a lot of reasons. And I'm assuming one is with a new set of rules, it makes it even more difficult to manage moving forward. But he had said, John Calipari's got to come up with a new program here, a new path, a new blueprint, because going and getting, you know, the best as freshmen, you bring them in, and then you end up playing against some 24-year-old from Wisconsin that, you know, it looked like Dan Aykroyd and Tommy Boy that did nothing but stroke threes against you. Older, been through it before, guys are just oftentimes going to win in terms of the NCAA tournament. And that philosophy that Calipari has, it's going to have to absolutely change. I don't know if it will, but I do know this. It has to for them to get back to where Kentucky fans believe they should be. I just don't think he's going to go anywhere. Fans want him to, but I think ultimately he's going to stay in Lexington.
Talking to JMV, our sports guy, you know, the same way I feel about the coach of Kentucky, John Calipari, same way I feel about the coach of Purdue, Matt Painter, except he got through the first two rounds, and therefore there's not going to be a question about him going anywhere. But if he had lost that first round like he did last year, I would absolutely be a guy saying, this is enough of this. He's got to go. When I take a look at some of the early matchups and the things that kind of impressed me, certainly Yale being able to get past Auburn, one of those things that you're like, okay, we can consider that part of that upset world. Oakland, you can consider a part of that upset world. Not an upset, but a team that I very much liked in that game, double overtime against Oregon, is Creighton. They looked very, very impressive to me, and it's not a team that people know much about. They're going up against Tennessee in the Midwest. So the winner of that would face the winner of Purdue Gonzaga. You like what Creighton has to offer?
Yeah, I mean, when you're thinking about it, let's just say, for example, Purdue moves on for the sake of what I'm about to say here. They beat Gonzaga, they move on, and Creighton does as well. I mean, they have a senior big man and in Kalkbrenner who can match up with Zach Edey. I mean, better than what most certainly can do, and what Greg McDermott has created there is just a group that is very versatile and, again, has a great deal of experience. They had a transfer in from Utah State, certainly a couple of shooters. And remember, Tony, that when you watch Purdue and Gonzaga play the Sweet 16, Ryan Nemhart, who is the younger brother of Pacer guard Andrew Nemhart, he was with that Creighton team for, I don't know, the past two, three, whatever years. I lose count nowadays with how many years these guys are going to have since COVID. But he was a major part of that team, and they have moved on and seemingly gotten better. So if there is a team out there that could match up with Purdue in the Elite Eight because of Kalkbrenner and what he brings to the table with, you know, being a guy that can guard, a big man that can match up against Zach Edey, the possibility looms right there if Creighton, again, can move on.
Let me change gears and move it over to the NFL for one of the rule changes that has now come out, which makes it very clear that the NFL is not interested in playing football. I don't want to hear it, how much money they're making, how the protect the shield. They're not interested in playing the game of American football. A ban on what is described as, and I'm saying this with air quotes, the controversial hip drop tackle. Talk to me about what they call a hip drop tackle. Your take.
It's basically where you grab, obviously the defense is up against it now because the rules are stacked up against them for the offense. But basically, Tony, what it is, when a defender around the waist grabs, let's just say a running back, for example, by the waist, and then with these swivel hips kind of twist it like you're twisting off a bottle cap. You know, twist them, utilizes their body weight and the momentum that they have created and their strength to kind of twist down the running back, as we're using as an example right here. And, you know, that has been viewed as problematic in terms of injuries here. Here's what's going to happen, Tony. One of these days, it is going to be really few and far between what defenses are going to be able to do to stop offenses, because the NFL long ago realized that you don't want a 6-3 game. You want a, you know, 35-31 game. That's what everybody's looking for, is the offense. So it's always going to be stacked up against the defense. And I will say this, you know, about, you know, this new rule that will ban this form of playmaking, tackling that a defense can go with, is it'll be a problem early and everybody will complain about it. And again, playing right into the wheelhouse of the NFL, because they love us all to complain. You and I, this stinks, that sucks. Oh my goodness, I can't believe this. The world is ending. They love that. But their players are good enough, talented enough, they're going to adapt. They will adapt to it. And it'll be something that I'm sure we'll allude to, because it's going to be another, again, in the long line of these calls that are going to be made by officials that will be scrutinized like you would not believe. I mean, it's going to be like a pass interference. And think about this for a moment. When you get a play down the field, wide receiver, every single time, if he doesn't catch it, what's he doing? He's getting up and saying, hey, where's the flag? He's making the flag motion. Hey, I got interfered with. This is going to happen at the beginning, Tony, every single time somebody makes a stinking tackle. It will. It'll happen every single time. And then you're going to bring even more so into play here the judgment of those officials. And I know the NFL wants this to go flawlessly, but they also love the fact when we complain and they have something to talk about. And we'll continue to talk about this. It'll be subject, but the players will adapt. But it is going to take a while. It is going to be at the very beginning, the early stages, Tony, of this. It's going to be ridiculous to watch it. Really,
they're
going to
make the game unwatchable, and they've taken away the importance of athleticism. It doesn't matter if I have enough speed to catch the guy. You will not let me take the guy down. What does it matter? What does it take to be a defensive all-star these days?
They don't want you to take him down. They want them to score.
Right.
I mean, you might as well have two offenses out there. Seriously, the NFL, they want the offense to shine. That's what they want. They don't really give a crap about defenses. You can see with the way the rules are going, it's stacked up against them. So what the NFL's ultimately, Tony, going to get is even more offense where we kind of view it as a high-level offense, but it's going to be predicated on the fact that so much has been taken away from the defense that's what we're going to get, and the NFL's going to love it, I promise.
The problem, JMV, talking to JMV, He is the voice of sports, is that the NFL forgets that the risk is inherent to the game, and it's why we watch. These guys are physically blessed, they have practiced, they have trained, they have skills, and we appreciate seeing it on display. Part of what we also appreciate is the little bit of risk at play here, that a tackle can actually hurt because the ground is hard and these guys are huge. If you want to take that away, you're saying you want NASCAR without the crashes. It doesn't work. And what the NFL is telling the fan is what you really like to see, which is the hard struggle, the realization that these guys can do something that you can't do. Well, you take that away from the fan, and it's something I can do. What's so damn special about it?
Hey, Tony, man, you just described me wearing parachute pants back in 1984. It's in the past. Yeah, that brand of football you're talking about is in the past. The NFL doesn't want it, and the NFL banks on this. The NFL banks on all of us, you and I having this debate, all of us griping about it, and then come running back to the big bad NFL. And again, I will tell you that is going to continue to happen until I am proven otherwise, because it always does. We've been down this path with what your garden variety of arguments regarding the NFL. But until people say, you know what, I'm not watching on Sunday, I'm going to go out and throw horseshoes, or I'm going to go out and I'm going to throw bags in the backyard, or I'm going to do something else. I'm not going to waste my time in using my disposable income on this game that has become so soft, right? And is nothing like I enjoyed when I grew up watching this game. Until people stand up for that, they're going to continue to run roughshod over everybody else with their brand of football that is going to be, again, a heavy offensive lean. And it's going to have defenses running around with absolutely no chance whatsoever. And it's going to magnify, once again, it's going to magnify the quarterback position even more, Tony, than it already has been magnified.
Right.
So that's where we are until we see a change.
We will get to the place where interceptions are not allowed because it'll hurt the quarterback's feelings.
Yeah, man, but seriously, we all joke about this stuff, Tony. We joke about, hey, why don't you go ahead? I think it was J.J. Watt that said, hey, go ahead and put a belt on, put a flag there, and that's how we'll play. Hey, that's a joke. But that can be meaningful, because long past when I'm dead, right, I'll be gone. And one of these days, that is probably going to be a logical selection as far as the owners' meetings and the competition committee is concerned, or where they want to move. One of these days, we'll be joking about that very thing. I'll be dead by then, but one of these days that's going to happen, because It always does. Just when we think something is absurd and ridiculous in sports, Tony, what happens? It takes place. This will too.
And well, if this is the path, you won't have to wait till you're dead. It's going to happen quickly, far too quickly.
Well, I don't know. I may pass out in this parking lot right here, Tony. Who knows? So.
JMV is the voice of sports. You can follow him on X, JMV1070, JMV1070 on X. Be sure to follow him there. More is coming up. I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today. These abortion lovers really are creepy. I'm not talking about the people who, for various reasons, might want a safe, rare, and legal abortion. I may disagree with it, but I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the people who want to celebrate. You remember when they used to sing their abortion? They think an abortion is great and wonderful and something to be so proud of. It's weird. It is weird to witness. It is twisted. It is sick. It is depraved. Let's bring in Senator Mazie Hirono, shall we? Oh, no, she's not on the phone. It's just from her website there where she's a sitting U.S. senator. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. What's going on? Hirono, Peters, Presley, colleagues. So that would be Senator Gary Peters of Michigan. It'd be Representative Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts and Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii. Introduce resolution recognizing abortion providers. The resolution honors abortion providers and clinic staff by designating March 10th, 2024 as Abortion Provider Appreciation Day. They wanted to go with Applaud Your Murderer Day, but they just didn't think it worked well on a t-shirt. This is twisted. This is diseased thinking. This is a questionable step. When they, the political left, want to use abortion as part of their 2024 platform so badly because it worked for them in 2022. We need to have legal access to abortion to keep it safe. And now you want to applaud this person? Wouldn't the better answer be a level of downplay? All right, we're keeping it legal here. We're keeping it legal there. We're doing that. All right, just everyone just be cool. Be cool, honey bunny. That's all you got to do. All you got to do is just keep it a little bit on the down low. You know what I'm saying?
Be cool, honey bunny. Be cool.
That's it. Not them. They cheer it every single day. Abortion Provider Appreciation Day. The glorification of killing. That's something else. And it goes along with this conversation that it just needs to be had. We're destroying society. We're destroying ourselves because we will not admit to the idea that some things are bad. Some things are wrong. Well, who are we to decide? Who are we to tell people that this is wrong or that is wrong? Some things are wrong. Like, for example, mutilating children and the whole trans game. It's wrong. We should be clear that we should want abortion, if it's going to be safe, rare, and legal, to be exactly those things. Not them, not the progressive. You want to know why I'm not a progressive? Cheering abortion is creepy stuff. That is creepy, dirty, weirdo stuff. And the left just loves to do it. That's who they are. Hard to deny when you've got a resolution in front of Congress. I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today.